On this week's episode of the Highly Relevant Podcast, Chilean filmmaker Sebastián Lelio, a first reaction review of Captain Marvel with Mike Sargent, and Telemundo's Un Nuevo Día personality, Stephanie Jimenez, La Chiqui Baby. Welcome to episode 107 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, a U.S. Latino show where I interview the people and discuss the moments that are shaping our American and Latino pop culture. I am your host, Jack Rico, and if this is your first time listening, thanks for discovering us. All right, guys, today we have three great guests. But before we talk about the guests, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the podcast. I wanted to thank everybody who's been reaching out, engaging with the podcast. Seems to be that people are listening. People are sharing it and people are engaging with us, sending out your tweets. Thank you so much. You know, I got to tell you, your engagement really matters. It drives motivation. It enforces commitment. It really helps. I mean, just sending out a tweet, sending, hey, I like the podcast, and sending a little bit of love really makes a difference, because you have so many things going on, and sometimes you think that people aren't listening, and then all of a sudden they are, and you kind of just need to know that, and man, it makes a hell of a difference. So thank you every single person that's been reaching out and talking about the podcast and how much they like it. So thank you to you for listening. All right, talking about the guests, I got Sebastián Lelio. If you don't know who he is, he did a movie called The Fantastic Woman, or A Fantastic Woman, that won the Oscar for Chile, and he was the director of it. He also did a movie called Gloria with Paulina Garcia. It's considered one of the best movies coming out of Chile, and he just remade it again with Gloria Bell, with Julianne Moore. The name of the movie is Gloria Bell, and I interviewed him here in New York City. Actually, person to person, sat right in front of him, and we talked about the art of remaking your own film, because he essentially is remaking the English language version of the Spanish language Gloria film that he did back in 2013. So why did he want to do this? We had a deep conversation about the origins of taking a risk when everybody said, it's not going to work out, man. And so far, the reviews have been glowing for the film. It might actually be just as good in terms of quality as the original one. And I want you to hear him talk about it, because for us, when someone tells us no, what makes us continue to go through it when we know that people are already against it? Well, it's those moments that he's going to be talking about in our podcast today. Then Captain Marvel's coming out this Friday. Hopefully you guys are going to go see it. I sat down with Mike Sargent for our first reactions of the film while we're inside the theater. You're going to want to hear Mike's take on it. You're going to want to hear my take on it. And then finally, we're going to be talking to Stephanie Jimenez. She is also known as Cheeky Baby. I met her in Los Angeles, and I thought she was a wonderful person, wonderful talent. And we did this great interview about how she got into the business, how you should also get into the entertainment journalist business in Spanish language or in English. And then right after, a few days later, she got a call and it was announced that she was going to be the new personality over at Telemundo's Un Nuevo Día, which is a huge deal for the Hispanic market, and congratulations to her. She didn't even know when we were interviewing for that position. She had no idea, which is the reason we didn't talk about it here. Nevertheless, great conversation, great interview, and thank you so much, Stephanie, for coming on board. With that said, empezamos con Sebastián Lelio. Love is in the air.
Everywhere you come here a lot?
Yes. No, not a lot. I mean, sometimes.
What's your name?
Gloria.
Okay. Okay.
Creo que estamos aquí. 1, 2, 1, 2. Perfecto.
Sí. Okay.
Sebastián Lelio, welcome to the Highly Relevant Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, I wanted to tell you a little bit of a story.
Okay.
I spoke to Juan José Campanella about, man, I want to say like almost 10 years ago.
Ooh.
And when I asked him why he didn't remake Secreto de Sus Ojos in English, like it was with Julia Roberts, he said, I didn't need to. It's perfect as it is. So when I saw you remake your own film, obviously I was aghast. I was like, what's wrong with Sebastian? Like, why would he do this? Most directors love the way it was. They never want to revisit the past. Mm. The past is the past. I have moved forward. I have evolved with my life. Mm. I have a different visions, different movies, different stories I want to tell. Mm. That's what most directors tell you. Mm. And I'm here trying to scratch my head in figuring out why you decided to be the one guy that didn't follow that path. Mm. Why did you remake Gloria?
Well, because of my admiration for Julianne Moore, first of all. Secondly, the way in which the film was born, the remake, was so organic mm-hmm. and natural that I think it tells the place where it comes from, you know? Because I wasn't interested in remaking my own film. I was about to shoot A Fantastic Woman and then to go and shoot Disobedience. So I was quite busy with two films that I was going to shoot back to back. But then Julianne and I, we share a manager. And maybe something got lost in translation, but I was informed or told that Julianne Moore had seen Gloria, had loved it, was going to go to Paris. I was living in Berlin back then and wanted to meet with me, but wasn't interested in doing a remake. So I was like, that makes sense, and I'm very flattered. So off I went to Paris to meet her, and we had this wonderful conversation, and she generously spoke about Gloria, the story, the character, with a deep understanding, and I was very touched by that. And towards the end of the meeting, I said, thank you so much, I'm honored to have met you. I've always admired you, and I totally get it if you don't want to like revisit the story or do a remake. And she said, no, what are you saying? No, I would only do it if you directed it. And then I said, or I channeled these words, because I don't know if I said them, but I heard myself saying them, and I would only do it if you're in it. And it was so genuine, you know? And then we hugged, and that was it. That's how the project was born.
Did you have any reservations?
A lot. I mean, of course, because of what you just said. Who wants to remake his own film? Why? You know? So I met all my most radical cinephile friends in Berlin, trying for them to tell me, don't do it. And I remember my friend Paz, who is a programmer in Berlinale. I met her and I said, listen, Julianne Moore is interested in that we create a new version of Gloria. And she was like, wow, do you love Julianne Moore? And I was like, I adore her. I think she's one of the greatest living actresses, period.
Right.
And she was like, that's so great to have the chance to revisit your own materials. It's almost like doing a Goldberg variation from Johann Sebastian Bach. And I was like, what are you saying? And then I said to her, but who does his own remake? And she said, exactly.
So you were going against the grain.
Well, I like
that. Are you a rebel?
I like that factor of, you know, if it worked, it was going to be, in a certain way, a shock to the establishment.
Right.
And that was very exciting. And the fact that it was dangerous, because it was so, there were so many traps that we could have fallen into.
Absolutely.
That made it exciting. And I would say a really interesting artistic challenge, because then who says that we don't have the right to revisit our own materials and to resignify them and to make them resonate again? You know, that's kind of like a tacit, strange moral rule that I don't know who wrote mm-hmm. and in which book. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was an act of freedom, and it was a risk, and we took it consciously, and. And we are very proud of with the results.
Gus Van Sant remade frame by frame Psycho.
Yes.
And people hated it. Mm-hmm. Because they thought, if you're going to do it almost exactly alike, you might as well just go watch the original.
Yeah.
Because it's so much better.
Yeah.
I saw so many similar images from the original Gloria.
Yeah.
That I said, I want to know exactly if he felt that these similar scenes, except with a different actress, was going to get any public criticism for that, and how you were going to handle the criticism if it backfired.
Well, the thing is that whenever you put something in the public square, you have to be prepared for crucifixion. You know what
and
I mean?
Were you okay with Crucifixion if it got there?
I mean, it's not that I want it, but you know, it's part of the game. You know, so I could have been severely criticized for making a Fantastic Woman, and before releasing it, I was ready to be, you know, like killed. But it didn't turn out that way.
Did you at any point decide that you were going to explore something differently that you never got to explore with Paulina in back in 2012?
I found that it was so exciting to give the archetype of Gloria a second chance, a new life, you know, the possibility to be channeled by another great actress. You know, because the first Gloria is a love letter to Paulina Garcia. And this second Gloria, it is in a certain way a love letter to Julianne Moore, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there is something of the attitude of a music cover here, you know? So you have, you're a musician and you create a melody and you play it. And then, I don't know, 6 years after that, you play it again, maybe with a new band in a different city. And that has a new energy because it's new people. But you're not deforming the original melody. You're honoring it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're somehow, because you have grown up, because life has done
you've
its
evolved.
Work, you've evolved, and the people around you have evolved, and you're somewhere else as a person, as a filmmaker, that makes its way into the final piece, you know?
Right.
So at some point I said, okay, I will try to change everything. And then I said, well, what's the point of that? You know, that's not, I want to honor the story and what made the first story work, but I want to tell it again, almost like staging a play in a new city with a new theater company.
Right.
You know, so when I realized that was the attitude, I felt morally authorized to do it. And no one was going to take better care than me, because I love that story and I've been living with it since almost 10 years now.
Right. Well, Frank Sinatra, it happens in music.
It happens
doesn't
in
happens
music.
In film.
Of course. I don't know why there is this resistance. You know why? I think there is a resistance against remakes, because there are a lot of examples where they have been made by different people for weird, strange reasons.
Right. You know, like, or money,
or mainly money. Okay,
mainly money,
and not with a soul, not with a heart, not really caring for what you're telling. And in this case, we cared, and you know, I love this story, and I was going to try to make it well alive and vibrant again.
So I think at this point, it begs the question: would you ever remake a Fantastic Woman?
Well, I think that for now, I'm okay with not remaking my own stories for the next years, because you know, this was an adventure, an experiment, and now it's time to move on.
Did you enjoy the process of remaking your own film?
I did. I did a lot.
What did you learn about yourself that you didn't learn back in 2012?
Well, in a certain way, I found some new spaces of freedom, you know, because this attitude of saying, who says that you cannot do it? It might seem kind of like not too important or superficial, but it's hiding a lot. I mean, behind that decision, there is a big movement towards freedom.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm very happy that people are connecting with the film, and I've watched it with an audience twice since it has been finished. And what happens in the theater is quite remarkable. People
right.
laugh, connect, they cheer in the climax, even the film hasn't finished, and then they sometimes applaud. So it's or at the end in the final credits, they are like following the rhythm, clapping, almost if it was like a concert. So that's really wonderful, and I'm so grateful and happy that it turned out like that, because in a certain way proves the point, you know. A story can be told again as long as it's well told. And if things are made with a soul and with a well genuine intentions, then who says that you're impeached to revisit your own materials and resignify them?
Do you have a problem with people saying no to you? Or do you like proving people wrong?
Oh, no. It's not about proving people wrong. It's about the excitement of expanding the limits of what's possible.
Are you trying to find out the things you can and cannot do?
Well, I'm very excited to walk into the unknown.
Why? What attracts you to that?
Well, it's like that new order. Is it new order? Uh-huh. Unknown pleasures.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, you get to a new. I mean, I see films as almost like spaceships. You know, you make a film in order to go somewhere else and to become someone new and to grow and to discover things within yourself in the process. You know? So when you finish a film, of course you are the same person, but you have evolved with the film. And after you have made a few films, your life is about when you were making A Fantastic Woman, when you were making Disobedience, you know, when you were making the new version of Gloria Bell, and you can really relate that to wherever you were in terms of your personal evolution. Mm-hmm. But then to answer your previous question, you know, what was different in terms of Gloria and Gloria Bell, I have to say that the game of the film is to turn a secondary character, a character that should be a secondary character in a standard film, the mother, the auntie, the, you know, the wife, and then the film would have gone probably with the husband, you know, but here it stays with Gloria and turns her by insisting in observing her over and over all the time from every possible angle, going through the entire emotional spectrum, turn her into an absolute protagonist. So it's kind of like the absolute portrait of a woman.
Right.
So if you change the woman / actress that is at the center of that observation,
the dynamics change too.
The DNA of the film changes. Not the story and not the mechanisms that made the story work, but the subject, the human being that you are observing, not only the character, but the artist that is giving the artistic battle in front of your eyes is someone new and is bringing a different backstory, a different mystery, a different energy, and that's what Gloria and Gloria Bell are all about, that woman.
How did you get into directing? What sparked the interest for you to want to make films? Why weren't you anything else? Why film?
Well, intuition, I guess, because I was growing up in Chile during the
decade. You were born in Argentina.
I was born in Argentina.
Do you consider yourself Argentine or Chilean?
No, Chilean.
Chilean.
Yeah,
okay.
But I love Argentina, and my father family is from Argentina. Mm-hmm. So I love Argentina and I have a close relationship with them. But I am Chilean. So when they said that Argentina won the Oscar, I was like, come on, guys. You've never like paid attention to me until now, and now you're claiming that the Oscar is Argentinian? Come on. That's not fair. When I was a teenager, I always wrote, you know. So
you're a writer.
I've always written.
By nature, yeah.
Yes. So I wrote short stories. Of course, poetry, because it's kind of like a cliche of being Chilean. It's like you give your first kiss, you write a few poems. It's part of life.
Right.
But then I took it very seriously, and I thought I was going to maybe become a writer or a novelist. But then as I was growing up, I was interested in photography, and then maybe acting, and then maybe, you know, visual arts. And I was like kind of like interested in too many things, but in nothing completely.
Right.
And then without being a cinephile, I thought that maybe cinema had the capacity to reunite everything, mm-hmm. you know, to have it all. And following that intuition, I went into film school, and then I fell in love with film. It was kind of like, this is it.
If you had to summarize what your films say to the common person that's seeing Sebastian's films for the very first time, what would be the recurring thread that you're exploring in each one of your movies?
It's hard to answer because I think...
What are you trying to find?
I think one tends to be relatively blind to what you do, you know, like... So I'm always very cautious with these statements, you know, because I'm not the one to overanalyze what I'm doing. But by saying this, I'm not saying that I'm naive and I'm not aware of the subjects. I'm working around with... on. God, I'm tired. But you can connect the dots when you look backwards.
Right.
And now I've made I think 7 feature films, and if there is a constant, I have to say that among other things, I'm usually very attracted towards characters that are resisting antagonistic forces.
Right.
That are impeaching them to become who they really are, and these characters.
And you want to know how they break through those walls.
I want to see them
fight the challenge.
Fighting those forces,
mm-hmm.
because when you put that pressure upon them, it's like squeezing a fruit. You know, you really can see what they are made of.
Is that something are these your stories? Do you want to break through those forces yourself and you put yourself in these characters to find out how they get there?
Now that you are framing it in this way, I don't know. Maybe you're right. I mean, why did I put myself in the situation of remaking my own film?
Right.
You know, maybe I wanted to see what I was made of, you know? Who knows? Who knows? Thank you for that.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't know. But to be honest, I mean, I have learned. At the beginning, it was always a very natural, intuitive way of saying yes or no to a project. And now it's a very conscious one. I don't, move if the project or the idea doesn't, you know, deeply touch me or is deeply moving to me. So emotion is kind of like the beacon to make a decision of what to dedicate a couple of years of your life to. So going back to Gloria Bell, there was the emotion and the excitement of facing this challenge was strong enough and inspiring enough to say yes.
Sebastián Lelio, muchísimas gracias por la entrevista.
Muchas gracias a ti. Un placer. Thank you. That was really interesting.
When the world blows up, I hope I go down dancing.
So what you're about to hear now is a segment I like to call First Reaction. In other words, it's an immediate reaction to a film as the end credits are still rolling. The reason behind it is because I think a first reaction is the purest form of obtaining a judgment on something you just experienced. This type of format allows you to hear what our real thoughts and feelings are in the moment, not be influenced by outside voices a day later. If you're a longtime listener, you know I've done these before, but if you're new, here is our first reaction to Captain Marvel.
Hey, it's Jack Rico. I'm here at the Lincoln Square Cinemas, and I'm right next to Mike Sargent while everybody's leaving the first press screening in New York City of Captain Marvel. Mike, I'm going to kind of just begin with you, some initial thoughts of what you thought of the film.
I have to say, I think it completely works. It fits like a glove into the rest of the Marvel Universe. I think casting is pitch perfect. I think it's more female-centric in the sense that movies that are written and directed by women, you could tell the same story, but when there's a female perspective, there are details, there are nuances, there are things that are paid attention to.
And, you know, as I'm looking at the film, I'm saying to myself, we've seen superhero women before, Wonder Woman, Supergirl, right. Remember? Back from the, I believe it was the 80s.
Right.
Supergirl's now on CBS.
Right.
Elektra with Jennifer Garner. I mean, yeah. We've seen this, but there's something special about Captain Marvel, man. It's almost like the peak version of what female strength is.
Well, you know, and what I liked about it is that it doesn't hit you over the head about that in any way. It's a lot of the little moments that ground it in reality,
right.
In terms of what the reality is of being a woman. And I have to assume they're just exploring it now, because this is really an origin story. So she doesn't find her place. She finds her place in the universe, and it happens to be on Earth. So we only get to touch upon earthly things.
Right.
You know?
This whole, like, other universe.
Yes.
So while we're walking out of the theater towards the lobby, let's break it down. How good was this? Because if you were to ask me, okay, Jack, just lay it down. What was better, Wonder Woman or Captain Marvel? Man. It's tough, but I think Captain Marvel is a better movie.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because I'd have to think about Wonder Woman. There were a lot of things I liked about it, but this, I think what the Marvel Universe has as an advantage is it's a universe you're familiar with, and because they've been smart enough to go back and forth in time in all of the Marvel movies, you know, the universe is really well constructed. And part of the joy is seeing how questions, as opposed to what they did with the Han Solo movie, questions
right.
you didn't know the answers to, but you actually were curious about, get uh-huh. answered. And you go, okay, that's kind of cool.
Right.
And you see how now this person who's coming in now as the beginning of phase three was significant before phase one.
Brie Larson is perfectly cast in this film.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I think I got a celebrity crush on her now, man. Seriously. She's so beautiful, but she's so strong.
Self-assured.
And self-assured. Completely.
She's got self-assured down. And it's interesting that she's cast because, as we've all know, you know, her wanting there to be more diversity among critics like us
right.
Has put her on the hot seat by conservatives. You know, so it's really interesting, her being who she is, playing what she is, coming at this time.
Oh, absolutely. I also thought that the special effects were great. The entertainment value and the entertainment factor was top notch. Marvel has perfected the Marvel movie.
I have to say, the more I'm listening to you and the more I'm thinking about the film now, because we're only 10 minutes out of it, you know, what I like best about it is just how well it works into the context of not just the movies, but where they're going. Because the action you talk about really is galactic action. There's a lot of galactic action. It's not like two guys fighting their powers and destroying buildings. This is galactic action. So it also shows the direction of where they're going with Phase 3, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, alien invasions. So that's kind of fun.
So this is
going to
get a bit, like,
yes,
it's going to
yes.
get into the purity of what science fiction
it's
is.
Much more science fiction. Yes, yes, it is. That's what I'm enjoying. It's opening up the potential that was always there, but it was smart to have done it the way they did.
So to recap, for me, Brie Larson was excellently cast. Mm. Entertainment value was top notch. Mm. While they never sacrificed
good writing, good pop culture references from the 90s. The soundtrack, if you're a 90s head, this is the soundtrack for you. They had Garbage. I mean, and Garbage meaning the band.
The band
Hole. I mean, they went to Nirvana. I mean, it was great. I was thinking that the Gin Blossoms were going to pop out of nowhere. And so I was just amped up from the beginning, and just I felt like the movie never let me down, never gave me the ability to do that. And guys, you gotta stay till the ending because there's two credits. And by the way, sometimes two post-credit sequences. Sometimes they let you down. Oh
no,
boy,
this one's perfect.
This is one of the greatest
pose.
Oh, this is
the cherry
on top, man.
It's a cherry on top.
Stay for all of them. They're fantastic.
I concur.
And it sets up Avengers Endgame.
Oh,
that's the big thing.
It sets it up so well that, like, you're ready to just jump right in. Like, you really don't want to wait. You're like, okay.
Let's camp out of the theater and just wait for Endgame, right?
Right. So, but, you know, that's the other fun part. The other fun part is that, you know, I didn't go to those screenings they had last summer where they showed, like, all the Marvel movies over 3 days.
Right.
You know, which, you know, I wish I had time like that just to do. I have one friend who did it. And
wow.
It must be an amazing thing just to see that whole arc, that whole universe be controlled, be what it is. It's pretty... That in itself, as I was watching this movie, I have to realize, though we're used to delving into universes, we've seen sequels to movies that have been done to death, you know, and reboots, but there's never been something that progresses like this, like what Marvel movies are
and
doing.
And that unites everything into this.
It's a phenomenon in movies right now that you know, we're experiencing it, but I think when they look back, when it happens more in other, you know, film, you know, universes, this is the template.
This is.
It's the template.
Oh, man. I am so psyched about this. There was that courage, right? That never quit attitude of the film that has to be seen by your daughters, your nieces, young girls. They should take schools to just go see films like this because...
As you said, the empowerment, but not empowerment in the sense of in your face and, you know, you go girl, but empowerment in the sense of, you know, day to day, like you're faced with a challenge. How do you rise to it? You know, what do you do? You know, what makes you... I think it's less about being a woman than it is about being, you know, yourself, being... owning your own power.
Right. Well said. And I think... I don't think I can say anything after that, my man.
Okay.
That was fantastic. So here from the Lincoln Cinemas at AMC Lincoln Square in New York City, Mike Sargent, Jack Rico, this is our first reaction.
This war is just the beginning.
I'm not going to fight your war. I'm going to end it.
And before I talk to Jiggy Baby, here are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend.
Si te acercas un poquito más, no sé.
No sé. Ximena Sariñana featuring Girl Ultra.
Pasar, si te acercas un poquito más.
I don't need letters to get the feels. I know you want more than the feels.
A-List. Doxamillion featuring Daramola.
You don't.
On top, este mal.
Gata, si me ganas, si te pones on top. Vamos a cambiarnos de rol.
If you're Hispanic and live in LA, you've most likely heard or seen Stephanie Hymenaitis, or as many people know her, La Chiqui Baby. She's become a popular presence with Latinos in the City of Angels because of her radio career and her hosting duties on Telemundo's Acceso Total. Our interview happened a week before the announcement that she will be the new addition to Telemundo's national morning show, Un Nuevo Día, beginning March 18th.
Hola, mis amores. Qué gusto saludarles. Elba, guapísima como siempre. Estás en Acceso Total y estas son las meras chidas con tu Chiqui Baby.
So, I wanted to start the podcast by telling my listeners how we met. So, I was in LA on a press tour to promote Consumer 101. and Taller del Consumidor. So we wanted to do a bilingual thing, and we had requested to be on the Telemundo LA station. So I'm not an LA guy, so everything seems new to me there. So we went to, I believe it was the Hallmark Network, and then after that, we went to you, and then we met for a segment that we did. But I had never met you. And then when you told me about your name, Cheeky Baby, I thought that was funny, but I was like, wait, no, that's your actual nickname. That's like, and you're like, and you kind of go, which one do you go by? Like, is it Stephanie or is it Cheeky Baby? Like, who's become more of your identity?
I don't know if to say it's fortunately or unfortunately, but you know, I always present myself since the start of my career as Stephanie Hymenaitis. That's my first name and last name. And then Cheeky Baby, because it was a nickname that I started with in the radio business. So I guess everybody in the Hispanic audience always remember the Cheeky Baby. So for over 15 years, I've been La Cheeky Baby. And it's very few people that know my name.
But have you ever felt like you wanted to reclaim your name? I mean, you have a beautiful name.
Yes. I think at the beginning when I was doing radio, just radio, it was convenient and it was, you know, I was more entertaining. Mm-hmm. But as long my career has been growing and, you know, I've matured and also I want to be taking more seriously and talk about, you know, have that versatility and do more human interest stories or be more of a journalist. Of course, the Stephanie Hymenaitis needs to be the first thing. Right. So yeah, I've tried to bring it up to the table a little more, but they still call me Cheeky Baby.
You know, it's interesting going from an entertainment journalist to a news reporter and for a reporter to actually be taken seriously because you did entertainment. Something about Spanish language, the market is once you do entertainment, you cannot really be taken seriously in the serious stuff, even though that it might not, you know, you might be more of a news junkie than you are an entertainment person. Right. And why do you think that is? Why do you think sometimes it's hard to do the evolution from entertainment reporter to serious news reporter?
I think it's two things. I think it's the cultural part of it. That, you know, we segment, we make things segmentized. And the other part, I think it's about yourself. There's not a lot of people that are willing to do different things. Mm-hmm. Like, I became a communicator because I started in radio. So when you say radio, radio is entertainment and it's music. So when I started to do TV, even though I studied the journalism career for 4 years, when I started doing TV, everybody wanted me to do music and entertainment because I had that personality. I was La Cheeky Baby. but I think not a lot of people could switch it up. That's a realistic thing. Not a lot of people could go from the serious to the fun.
Be a chameleon.
The serious.
Right. Almost be a chameleon. Un camaleón.
Un camaleón en español. Sí. I think I have that that attribute or that positivity in my personality.
La versatilidad.
La versatilidad that I think has given me that opportunity to keep growing. But I do believe that there's just certain standards in the Hispanic community that, oh, you are in news. You have to, if you want to be an anchor, you have to be a reporter first. And if you come from news, you don't, if you come from entertainment, you can't do news. So there is still that, you know, stigma. But I think things are changing and, I've never been afraid to explore and to little by little show that, you know, that versatility that I could have.
How did you get into the business?
Well, I started studying communications because I wanted to be a reporter for CNN. Basically,
your dream since you were like a young little girl? It's like, Mom, I want to be on CNN.
My dad used to watch every night when we lived in Mexico, HLN. So headline news. Mm-hmm. So I remember it stuck to my head that reporting for CNN, Stephanie Hymenidis. That was kind of like my dream thing.
Wow.
So that's why I went into journalism. But in Mexico, you know, studying journalism, Jack, it was more of a MMC career.
What does
Have
that
you
mean?
Ever heard of that term?
No. What is that?
MMC is mientras me caso, while I get married. And I know.
Yeah, a placeholder. Kinda, a placeholder, just to kind of till I get. That's so funny.
Yes. And it, and you know what? It's kind of true because in Mexico, times have changed, but you know, there was when you were in certain status of socially, if your parents have money, you would go to school in my era, but you would go to school just to have a degree, but you would not, be a doctor or a lawyer. You would just have the degree and then you would go get married and have kids, and because you have a good life and your husband will take care of it. Most of the people I know in my career, most of my friends are in that situation.
Mm.
Like they got married and have kids and they're very happy, but they didn't really become journalists like me. Like I'm a full core professionist.
So what happened after you graduated from communication school? What was the actual first big break to be in the media business? Was it in radio?
Well, I think that's the key in my career. I started working in radio 2 years before I graduated.
Wow. And
it was basically a coincidence because they thought I had a
rap. It wasn't the coincidence. It was the beginning of destiny.
I know. But I never thought of this career like, you know, there were so many ramas that you could go into. You know, you could do movies, you could do PR and in the communications degree or career. But 2 years before I went, my brother said, you know what? They're looking for a new voice on this radio station. And this radio station was the number one radio station in Mexico, in Guadalajara. Where
¿Cómo se llama?
Super Estéreo, La Radio Pirata. And then I'm like, oh, cool. But, you know, in Mexico, it's like, who you know? It's not like here, you go online, you know, you submit your resume. In Mexico, it's like, who you know? How are you going to get there? You're not going to go knocking on the door. So one of my professors worked for that company, not the radio station in Precise. So I told him, you know what? I heard this rumor that they're looking for this new voice, and I would just like to go and see if I had the opportunity. So that was my first step. And I went there. He got me an interview. Mm-hmm. But when I got to the interview, I never met anyone for the interview. I went directly into a studio to record, like a casting. And, you know, that was the first time I learned that whenever you're made for something and if you are ready for something, if you're prepared for something and if you're made of it, to become someone, you'll do good. And that's the first time I knew.
You had an epiphany. It was a moment of clarity, a radical clarity that just hit you. Like you knew that from this day moving forward, your life was going to be completely different.
Correct. So 2 years before, you know, I had this gig, which was a job, but I think I got paid like $100 every 2 weeks. It was like nothing. But I was on the radio and I was a cool one.
And that's all that matters. It's that adrenaline rush, man. Come on.
But definitely, you know, enough. You know, it's been over 16 years that I've been doing radio and it's been the pillar of my career. You know, I started in radio and I still do radio.
Hey, what do you think about radio nowadays? It just seems like more people are poo-pooing on radio more than ever. And it's like, you know, the hot new thing is podcast, which it kind of is. But, you know, even podcasts are sort of a retro throwback to radio.
Exactly.
Why do you think people are so down on radio? Or do you see it differently than most people?
No, I do believe that radio has downsized. I think the problem is the way we've taken radio too. You know, I've been working, like I said, for 16 years, and it has changed so much. You know, they don't let you as a personality evolve. They don't let you grow. They don't let you talk. So if they tell you you're going to talk 10 seconds on top of the song, well, that's not really giving content to the listener who really connects with you. And I think that's why podcasts have been so exciting for everyone to listen, because they want to listen to the talent, right, the people that want to say something. So that's why now I have my own show, which is not precisely a podcast, but my show, it's a new way of putting radio out there. And what I create is content. I create content for my listeners. And
unpack that for me. So
it's a syndicated radio show.
Okay, so take me through how this whole thing got built.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I had a successful career in Univision for over 14 years. I worked for CBS Radio. I worked for SBS Radio. You know, the most important companies in the radio business. And I've learned that I've always felt that I was not growing enough, or I was limited. So I had the opportunity with my husband, which we worked together in the business, to create my own show with my own rules.
I love this.
This started like 3 years ago. So basically in the show, I try to give people what is trending information wise. So I create capsules of two minutes, and I talk about everything, gossip, entertainment, politics, you know, in my own little way of informing people, in not a very profound way or very deep. I'm not an expert in everything, but I just give my own point of view. And this content, which is six capsules an hour, are being put in a cloud.
Oh, okay. So you don't have like a traditional morning show that you do radio show that lasts 4 hours, you know, with sponsor breaks and everything else. You're creating audio content that can then be distributed on radio platforms throughout the United States, either in English or in Spanish.
Well, basically in Spanish, because I do everything in Spanish. But you put me, like, let's say you own a radio station and you want the show, the Cheeky Baby Show. So basically you do get four or 5 hours of content that I make for you. But the difference is that you could put whatever music you want, whatever commercials you have to put on. And that differs in every other station around the nation. That started 3 years ago. And now we're in over 50 cities.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But definitely the key for this, it's to be constant. Because I've heard like a lot of big personalities that want to syndicate their show. And they do not put a lot of effort on all the stations around the nation, just the Chicago one or New York one or LA one or Miami one. And with this format, you give love to everyone.
Right.
So it's been pretty successful, and I feel free, and I feel that I could do and say what I want in my own radio show, a little bit different than a podcast. But I the key on this, bringing back that thought, it's the fact that you have to be disciplined. You have to record every day, because if not, you lose, you know, you lose authenticity and you lose timing. You know, you have to be on top of what's trending.
How did TV come into your world? Was that a natural thing that you were like, okay, whenever my career ends in radio, I'm just going to go to TV? But everybody knows that getting into TV is damn hard.
I know. Well, actually, Jack, I wanted to be in TV since day one.
So you didn't want radio first. Radio just happened to be sort of
Who wants to be in radio? You want to be on TV. Everybody wants to see, you know, you want everyone to see you and to tell your mom that you're on TV.
Yeah, but TV is intimidating though at first, you know?
It is, and it's not for everyone, but
would you say you were born for TV or born for radio now that you've done both?
I think I was born, I mean, I could say for both, but I think I was born to do TV. I really enjoy it. Mm. But that was my number one thing. Remember, I wanted to be a CNN reporter on TV.
Yeah.
That's why I started my internship in Televisa in Mexico.
What's that place like? Is that everybody makes it seem like it's the pantheon of television? There's this nostalgia and romance with that building. What is it really like inside?
Well, you know, the Televisa that I worked was not in Mexico City. It was in Guadalajara, which it was, you know, it was not the, you know, it's not, it was not the network in New York. But I did feel, and I have to be really honest about this, I did feel that you needed to be pretty enough to be on TV. It was not all about the brains. It was not all about your being charismatic. It was all that you look good before anything else. And if you knew someone, that would help a lot. And I didn't have those two by them, you know, at that point in my life. You know, I was not meeting the standards of beauty for them in that point. So when I did my internship, nobody even, you know, said you would be good for TV. But I learned everything about TV, and my career actually in TV started way later. I think it started like maybe like 3 or 4 years later than I started my radio career.
And was, how did you end up getting to Telemundo Acceso Total?
Well, you know, I started in Univision first, and Telemundo has been recently, the last 4 years of my career. I started in Telemundo, my home, and which I'm really happy. But it really was because radio. I was in Univision Radio, and when I moved to work for another company, you know, now I had the opportunity to work with Telemundo, and I was, you know, I was seeing everything that I was not seeing in Univision with Telemundo. You know, they were being more aggressive on programming. Mm-hmm. They were giving opportunities to people that were not giving opportunity before. So I said, you know what? I think I'm more of the Telemundo mission. Yeah. I think it goes with me. So when I was working in LA for a radio station morning show, the executives from Telemundo, which knew I was available to do TV now, offered me to be part of a judging panel of a reality show. So I was one of the judges because I was a TV personality / radio personality.
Right, you fit the bill.
So I fit perfectly on that. So they invited me to be part of this show with Lucero, Luis Fonsi, Olga Tañón, which was Yo Soy El Artista.
And, you know, I remember that show, yeah.
That was a 3-month contract. And then after that, you know, I started, you know, seeing or meeting a lot of people from the network. And then they said, oh, we want you to start collaborating with Un Nuevo Día. So that was one. But then I'm in LA. I need to have something more steady, you know, every day. So I got the opportunity to start hosting Acceso Total in the morning for a half an hour entertainment show. So I've been doing that for 3 years.
That's
already
so crazy.
With them.
Tell me a little about your approach with social media, okay? You have a lot of followers, but they seem to be really engaged. What is your approach to the way you socialize on there?
Well, you know, I think in the media, in the Hispanic media, I think I was one of the first ones that was really truly engaging or using Twitter and the Facebook and the Instagram. So I've tried to be like always like on top of things or trying to be on the trends, if it makes sense. But honestly, now with the bloggers and with the influencers and the YouTubers, I can't keep up. I just do my best. It's crazy.
They've taken it to another level. Seriously.
I know. I mean, I think I do a good job, and I try to, you know, put good, nice pictures, and you know, I try to understand my audience, you know, as much as I can. You know, I mean, I want to show them a little bit of who I really am, but also what they want to see, because, they want to see what you wear. They want to see where you go and eat. They want to see what you do behind the scenes. So I try to give them a little bit of everything. I'm not the kind of person that shares everything on social media. Not so far. I want to keep some things private, mm-hmm. but I show as much as I can with my personality. And that has worked for a while. I don't know now what I have to do to get like 1.5 million. you know, some people take their clothes off. Some people teach how to do matcha balls. I don't know. I need to see what's my next step.
Do you feel that social media, to a certain extent, is another full-time job along with the job that you already have? Is it suffocating at some point where you just, you know what? What is all this for? I just want to quit.
Ah, all the time. I love it and I hate it. It's just, you know, it's tiring and it's stressful.
It is.
Sometimes I feel it's a little more stressful than your real job. because like us, for us women, it's more difficult. Oh, I don't have makeup on. Oh, the lighting is horrible. Oh my God, this outfit does not flatter
me. So you're always on. You're always
on. Exactly. And not that you want to be fake, because I think it's not about that, but you want to look good for your audience. So it is stressful. But I truly believe that there's going to be a point that, you know, it's going to be cool to quit Instagram, or it's going to be cool to just be out of social media and enjoy your life. I'm, you know, going with the trend. But I do think a little too much is a little too much.
That is true. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. You can catch Stephanie on Telemundo. You're in what, like 30 markets now with Acceso Total?
Yes, thank God. Thank you.
Yeah, that is so awesome. And if somebody wants to listen to you on the radio, where do they go to?
They go to any platform and look for El Show de Chiqui Baby.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. And it was great meeting you and great talking to you.
Thank you very much, Jack. I really admire your work. Thank you for representing us Latinos in both markets. And I hope to see you soon so we could chat and have some coffee.
Definitivamente. Muchísimas gracias.
Adios.
Adios. Bye. And that's it for episode 107 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I want to thank Sebastian Lelio and Stephanie Jimenitis, along with Mike Sargent, for coming on the show. And I hope you guys enjoyed the conversations as well. If you'd like to support the show, please spread the love on social media and pass the word to all of your friends. You can reach me on Instagram at Jack Rico and on Facebook at JackRico40. Remember, it's only through your support that our show can grow. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.